Meeting, and we will start with the minutes. Any comments on the minutes? Can I approve them? Can I sign them?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you very much. Apologies,
Councillor Edgeley.
Just Councillor Edgeley.
I've not received apologies from anybody else, Chair.
That's it. Okay. Public question time is nil, obviously. Councillor session is nil. Members' items is nil. And called in items is nil, which takes us straight to the officers' reports. And where have you gone? And Michelle is going to make a presentation. It's part of the programme that we asked to be brought forward for scrutiny. It was delayed because of the imminent purchase of the co-op, which has now taken place. And hopefully the FHSF funding is at last going to be spent. It's over to you, Michelle, and I'm going to go and sit over there to watch.
Okay, thank you. So, shall
we take questions at the end, or do you want to stop as people go by?
However everyone wants to do it. I could talk about this for weeks on end. So
if you do want to interrupt, Michelle will respond.
Okay, so I know some of you have sat through various scrutiny meetings and cabinet meetings where you've kind of heard the story that sits behind the town centre transformation, but equally some of you are new to the council, new to the scrutiny committee. So basically what I'm going to run you through is the rationale for change, what the grand vision for the change is, what makes that tricky, what makes it fun, where we're up to at the moment and where we see things going in the future. So as Councillor Beattie said, if there's anything you want me to stop and go over, I know this inside out, so I might fall into shorthand, so just stop me if I do. So I'll start you off with a bit of a snapshot of some stories that featured within the press over a number of years. And the reason I've done this is because a big part of the work around the transformation that we're doing is around looking at perceptions of what's going on in Stafford Town Centre, and certainly since the pandemic, I think a lot of things have been attributed to COVID, when actually the way that people shop, the way that people use town centres, the way that people live has been changing over a number of years. So they don't make great reading, but that's a kind of selection of headlines from between 2012 and 2018. Where local newspapers and the BBC have kind of drawn attention to issues in and around the town centre. With the exception of the BBC comment, these are primarily linked to retail, and something that I'll probably say enough times to make you annoyed is the solution to creating vibrant town centres is not putting all our eggs in the retail basket, because the retail market has changed, continues to change, and that's just the nature of the beast. So although retail features heavily throughout, it's about looking at what we can do to make sure that whatever changes we do implement are for the long term. So all this is going on over a number of years, and then in late 2018, I think it was actually Boxing Day 2018, the Future High Streets Fund was first announced with the first of three bidding rounds, which was expression of interest. And basically what every council in the country attempted to do was set out what the challenges were in their town centre. And I've listed a number of points there. Yes, there are vacant properties. That's not just about the number of vacant properties that were in the town centre, but also the proportion of vacancies to filled units. We also had issues around what kind of uses had we got in the town centre, was there enough there to actually bring people in, which then links us into the idea of not just footfall in terms of how many people are in the town, but when they come in, are they coming in, going to one place and then going straight home, or are they coming in and spending time in the town centre? So it's not just a case of one transaction, it's actually that town centre sort of being alive and vibrant. There are also issues around the perception of safety and crime, and the document to the right of the screen is basically a selection of headlines in local newspapers that we collated as part of our bid to say this is why we think Stafford needs some funding, because there are issues here that the market isn't going to pick up. So for example, where you've got large vacant retail units, there's a reason that they're vacant, and some of that is down to the fact that, and I probably oversimplify this, but the big shops are too small for the big retailers and too big for the small retailers. But there's a lot of cost in changing the size of a unit. There's a perception that we just go in and stick a partition wall in, job's done, it's fine. It's not as easy as that. So it's understanding what changes are needed within the town centre and within the individual units, so that whatever change we bring about stands a chance of success. So as I said, it's about more than vacant retail units. And this phrase, which I absolutely hate, of ghost town, because it's just not the case. Stafford isn't a ghost town, but that's the perception. So why is it considered a ghost town? And as I said, it's not just about the vacancies. It's about what are we actually setting our stall out with to get visitors into the town centre? What is our visitor offer? And we'll talk a little bit later about the other projects that are coming forward now. They're also picking up on that point. If you look around Stafford, the age of some of the properties means that they're not in great shape. So if you were an up-and-coming business, be that retail, be that food and beverage, be that a service organisation, do you really want to be moving into a property that isn't new and sparkling? Probably not. Again, another perception. These aren't council properties, so if we're going to try and tackle any of this, we need some money to help us do it. So that brought us to, what do we actually want Stafford to look like? And I've put this, I suppose it's a bit of a tagline, transforming Stafford into the best town centre to live in the UK. That's really important, because as I said before, we can go and talk to retailers all day long and we can ask them to come into the town and we can make it attractive for them to do so. But if people are not coming into town centres, the retailers won't stay. So what we know is that when people live in a town centre, immediately they're present in the town centre. So we need to think about how to create that community. Social media is tricky. Why do you want people to live in the town centre? Town centres should be for shops and shopping and retail, and well, it's your fault that all the shops are closing. For every retail unit in town centre, there's an upstairs, and sometimes the upstairs is used as a storeroom, but sometimes there's a first floor and a second floor. Why aren't people living there? And that was part of the work that we did way back at the beginning of this. I think we'd given around consent for 200 individual residential units within the town centre boundary, and about 20% of those had actually been implemented. Why? Because the offer for the residential properties wasn't what people wanted. So we know where our housing demand sits. So yes, we think people are going to want to live in the town centre, but they don't necessarily have the right properties available to them. So, this map was pulled together in March 2019, which was the point at which we first submitted a bid to the Future High Streets Fund. And basically, what we were saying is, within the town centre, which is within the thick black line, there's an area that we're calling Northern Town Centre, and I think most people kind of know where that is, but effectively it's everything north of the Market Square. The red properties there are where there's empty ground floor units, which is where you get your retail. And if you look at the size of some of those, that's the problem. They're too big, and some of them have been empty a long time. Now, that picture's changed a lot because naturally it does, and a little bit later you'll see a picture of what used to be, I think it was Dorothy Perkins in its last iteration, which is now Hogarth's. So that unit did change, but equally we've still got a vacant M&S. So this picture hasn't massively changed because there are issues with what sits within that area. So I've included this quote because it's really important to explain why we're doing what we're doing. So if you convert somebody who struggles with maths to retailers disappearing, instead of saying, retailers, retailers, come back please, actually, we're an ace historic town. We are the county town. We have got lots of beautiful historic buildings. We've got a beautiful park. We've got a great college with big aspirations. Why aren't we focusing on those bits, which will then encourage people into the town, which then the commercial market will say, hang on a minute, Stafford's really busy and vibrant. We want our business there. So instead of trying to limit what we're looking at to retail, we're looking at the bigger picture. So Stafford's strengths. And there are a couple of these that you might disagree with depending on whether you got stuck in traffic today. But road, rail and air connectivity. So we looked at how you get into and out of Stafford, and actually in terms of being able to move around the country and also go outside of the country, we're actually really well placed. But I do accept when there's a problem on the motorway, nobody believes that. We've also got quite a broad, it's a bit of a techie term, but travel to work catchment area. So effectively, because of how well connected we are, people will be inclined to live in Stafford even if they don't work in Stafford. And by Stafford, I mean the borough. So we know we're a good place to encourage people to come and live. And part of that is Stafford is beautiful. It's urban, it's rural. We've got lots of listed buildings, lots of conservation areas, lots of things to encourage people to want to be here. Now I included pedestrianised town centre. Again, not everyone will see that as a positive, but if you think about what we've just done with Market Square, for example, having that kind of event space would be very tricky if we had a vehicle heavy town centre. So that's why we consider that a strength. I'm sure you're all well versed in the amount of growth that we've had in the borough. Some of that's linked to the projected population growth by 2029. We've also, this is from 2019, I think it was a 6% increased footfall count at the railway station. That was pre-pandemic, and having spoken to the train operators post-pandemic, that's still on the rise. And we know we've got a strong housing market. We don't have a strong housing market in the town centre for all the reasons I've kind of set out. But we know that if we build houses in Stafford, people want to live in them. We also have a really, really good partner in Newcastle and Stafford College Group, who have one site's now finished and the Institute of Technology is underway. So they've got big ambitions. And when the college has big ambitions, that brings students, brings families, all of those people then potentially will be in the town centre. So we need to think about how we capture those people. And then I've also listed a number of our partners. There are more, but it is really important to point out the Borough Council can't do any of this on its own. This is a programme that will develop over a number of years, and we need to work with partners who have expertise with business, who have expertise with funding, who have expertise with understanding how the nature of commercial and residential markets is changing, to make sure that what we're looking to build and looking to implement is the right thing for Stafford. So we know what we want to do, we know why we want to do it, and we know where we want to do it. And I think it would be lovely if we could then just say, right, everything's sorted, these are the projects, and immediately you will see change come about. The problem is that we're then operating in quite a tricky position. So first of all, and I've mentioned this before, The council don't own the shops in the town centre. They don't own any property in the town centre. We don't set the rates. We don't set the rents. So lots of perception is around, well, if you just drop the rates, people would come into the town. We genuinely don't have any control over that. We also can't make property owners do things. So again, I think there's an idea that if we've got a shabby shop front, if we got them to paint it up and it looked nice, then Stafford's more attractive. And yeah, that would be ace, but we don't have any powers to actually be able to do that at the moment. I know there's been talk about that nationally, but something would have to be in a pretty dreadful state for anything to be able to be done, and properties just being empty isn't something that we can tackle. Probably the biggest issue that we've had in terms of our Future High Streets programme, and why when I come to scrutiny every month and give updates on projects, there will be some that we don't talk about. That's because we are working within a commercial world, so where we're trying to do land assembly. So for example, with the purchase of the co-op, we have to be very mindful before we reach a point of agreement that if we're still in negotiation with a landowner, we need to be conscious of the fact that we probably shouldn't be going to committees and reporting what we're doing, because that could prejudice our position in terms of what we're trying to do. Part of the problem is that the minute that we got our Future High Streets funding award in 2020, well, it was actually Boxing Day 2020, lovely late Christmas present, the exact amount of money we were awarded was publicised immediately. So anybody that we were trying to negotiate a commercial deal with was aware of how much money we were going to get in the bank. And that makes it really, really difficult, particularly if you've got properties where the people that own them are in no rush to do anything. But we've got an extremely limited deadline by which to spend our funding. So it's a really tricky position to be in. So linked to that, we've got time constraints around the grant funding conditions, but then procurement for a local authority, again, is not an overnight process. I wish it was, but it isn't. So these things take time. And the problem is that while you're doing these things, at a point where you can't say a great deal about what you're doing, you end up with a bit of a vacuum, and there's not a huge amount you can do about that. But that's entirely why I think people get so frustrated, saying, well, nothing's changing, lots and lots of things are happening, just nothing particularly visible. And then finally, in terms of delivery, it's really interesting looking at how the development market has been changing. So when we were in the pandemic, we were working with consultants where great swathes of companies were furloughing people. We were really lucky in that the consultants we were working on with across a number of projects didn't get furloughed, but there are other councils where literally the whole team they were working with suddenly wasn't available anymore. What we've then found is that when everyone started going back to work, it's a really competitive market. But also there's a lot of funding around. So you've got Future High Streets Fund, Towns Fund, Levelling Up Fund. There's other bits and pieces kicking around. That means there's an awful lot of work for the same number of design firms, legal advisors, commercial advisors, construction companies, demolition contractors. So it's not a case of, oh, we've got this brilliant project, we've got it fully funded, we'll just go and find a contractor. They won't necessarily want to bid for work, so we have to factor that in as well. I have made reference as well to internal external resources. So we're not a massive council. We have small teams and we've got lots of things on the books, which you'll see in a second. And we've got to be able to respond to changes. So you'll see this with the co-op project with Future High Streets. That wasn't in our original suite of projects, but we weren't able to do what we wanted to do. We had to change. But the nature of local authorities is you can't do things dead quickly because there's a process that you need to follow. So, this sounds like a therapy session. It's not meant to be. It's just to give some context as to why it's not an overnight task. So, just to give a little comfort that there is absolutely masses going on. This is a list of a number of the projects that have either been delivered, are being delivered, or are being brought forward by either ourselves or partners. So We all know about Market Square renovation. I'm not going to dress it up, it's a massive success. I'm really pleased with it. It looks beautiful. And it was really important for us that we created that space in the centre of the town, because then we can put on decent events. Decent events bring people. People then spend time in the town. I know there were people that came to the Market Square event who then disappeared off to Boots and Superdrug and Primark and stayed in the town. They wouldn't have gone to those shops if we hadn't brought them in with the event. The next one coming up is the works outside of the railway station. This is partly to deal with the idea that you come to Stafford on the train, it's really easy to get straight into the town centre, but go through Victoria Park because it's stunning. You might stop in the cafe on the way. Stafford then becomes, you're not just coming to go and do one thing, you're coming, you spend some time in the park, you go into the town centre, you might stop for something to eat, you might go to the cinema. It's just making that visitor experience better. Obviously, you know all about the former co-op transformation, and I've snuck the picture behind the words because I love the CGI. We also have the Staffordshire History Centre, and I will show you pictures of a couple of these on the final slide. So the Staffordshire History Centre is an absolutely brilliant project that the County Council are leading on. With lottery funding and some money from the Borough Council as well as their own investment.
Can I just interrupt there, because it's also in your report. Can you mention that the William Salt Trust is a major contributor in that the substantial building belongs to the Trust?
It does.
And it has always been forgotten, as this is supposedly a County Council project. Really important.
No, it is, and it's another example of partnership working. And
it's a charity, and it's going to stay independent.
Yeah, and I think the trust punch above their weight, because this is an enormous project, and I think there are several elements to it that it wouldn't be happening if it wasn't for the Salt Trust being involved. So yeah, that is.
And I must declare an interest because I'm a trustee.
That's actually on site now. It's quite nice when you look out the window and you can identify where the crane is.
And that project alone has taken us 8 years to bring to fruition.
Easily.
The first round we failed, and the second time round it's taken 4 years. So it shows how long these projects can take to get there.
Absolutely. I've already mentioned, the Shire Hall Enterprise Centre. So I understand it's either completely let now or very nearly completely let. So that's the area at the back of the Shire
that's
Hall that used to be the
library.
Yeah. So the Chamber of Commerce are in there, but there's also a number of other businesses now. I've mentioned the college already, so the Innovation Hub, which is in the town centre. And I'm just turning around to Councillor Pert. Have I given it the right name?
Skills and Innovation.
Skills and Innovation, thank you. And the Institute of Technology, which sits within the Station Gateway. That's a fluke. I didn't mean to put Station Gateway next. But the Institute of Technology is basically the first part of the Station Gateway scheme that's coming forward, and again, on site now. Station Gateway, for those of you who are members this time last year, you'll remember that we did a consultation on a document that kind of set out a vision for that scheme. So now that the Institute of Technology's got planning permission, we then factor that into what actually will develop out on the rest of that site. Can never talk about Stafford and redevelopments without Victoria Park, because it is really significant. £2.5 million worth of renovation. And the minute you get off the train and walk through that park, the amount of comments we get that there are so many other towns that do not have that, where the train station is on the edge of the town and then you might walk down a boring road with nothing on it, and it's not a great welcome to the town. A lot of places are very envious of us for that. And then finally, the Eastgate Regeneration Scheme, which is something that the County Council are leading on. Most visibly, it's the bit where the Magistrates Court used to be. And in the report, there's an update that the county provided me with, which is basically explaining what they're doing at the moment, which is primarily looking for a development partner to bring that scheme to life, really. So, because I have to end on a positive, some nice pictures just to kind of give you a bit of flavour of what we've got here. And I think the point I want to make here is around scale. So we've got to the left, we've got the proposed co-op redevelopment. To the top we've got, that's the picture of the Institute of Technology for the college. Just underneath that we've got the Staffordshire History Centre. Below that we've got Victoria Park, and then to the right we've got Station Gateway. These are really big projects for a place the size of Stafford, and it demonstrates the ambition that the borough has. But for all the reasons that I've mentioned, you'll never get this kind of change overnight. What this does as a package is says to external investors and to any funding bodies, Stafford Borough knows how to deliver a project, so you can have confidence in coming to Stafford, and hopefully this will act as a catalyst for that additional investment in the area.
Thanks, Michelle, that's very helpful. And now we'll challenge you with lots of questions, I'm sure.
Anybody want to start?
Can I go?
If not,
we negotiated obviously for the core building, but prior to that, I think we had an interest in Marks and Spencer's, did we not?
We did.
I know that went in auction for £250,000, but no doubt the developer wanted several million, I would think, once he knew what funds we had available.
Yeah, it's tricky. So as a council, as a local authority, we have to demonstrate that we're spending taxpayers' money sensibly and achieving value for money. So when you buy a house, you might end up getting in a bidding war and you pay over the asking price. If council's going to do that, they've got to be really careful about to what point do they go, because is it still value for money for the public purse? It's tricky trying to do that as a non-commercial entity.
We'll go page by page of the actual report, but just before that, what you're saying, Michelle, is that we're going to attract visitors and so forth, to attract investment. How do we know that we're attracting investment? How are we going to measure success is the question that we need to ask ourselves.
So I think the co-op's a good example. So far we've released some CGIs of what we'd like the frontage of the building to look like. We've already had a number of inquiries from housing providers, commercial operators saying, I'm really interested in this. This is just one project. I'm really interested in this. What's it going to look like? What are your time scales? Stafford looks really good. We'd like to kind of be in on that. And I think it's basically being mindful across all of the projects, not just the ones that the borough are delivering, to look at what kind of response we're getting. It kind of then goes from that micro local level to something like UK REIF, which is the property and investment forum's not the right word, is it? Event. Where basically investors are looking for opportunities, and that's the kind of place that we would then take our plans for Stafford to say, this is coming, and that's where a lot of investors then sort of put their colours to a scheme. So it's a bit of a mix.
How do we measure that success? How do we actually, in a year or in 3 years, look at how many people have invested? Is that through the increased business rates or what?
It's
and because I'm thinking of what we might be wanting to scrutinise in 12 months' time,
yeah.
For instance.
So there's a number of things that we need to do as part of the conditions of the funding award that we got from Future High Streets, which is around the kinds of things you would expect. So what does footfall look like now as opposed to before we made any interventions? But also it's things like how many vacant units are there, how many people are living in the town centre, what's the council tax revenue, what's the business rates revenue. But then it's things like looking at how many people are employed in Stafford that weren't before.
Right.
So there's a whole range of things, and I think certainly if there's something that scrutiny wants us to try and measure, if it's measurable, then I don't see why we wouldn't try.
I think just to add to that, Chair, obviously investment, we're putting in a significant amount of public investment, and that is a catalyst to private investment that will come forward in the future, and obviously we will be tracking that, whether it's further investment through the projects that we're promoting or some of the other development opportunities within the town. So I think, you know, a year, 2 year, 3 year down the line, we'll have a better idea of that investment that has come forward within the entire town centre. So there's a range of metrics that we're tracking and we can measure and we can monitor and we can report progress. And I think one of the most important ones as well is actually just how you feel when you wander around the town centre. And is there a buzz? Are the people coming into the town centre, not just to shop, as Michelle's outlined, you know, whether it's leisure, whether it's recreation, or with people living here. So it's just that feeling, you know, does the place feel like it's on the up? And so there's all the metrics, the numbers, and there's that kind of other sort of happiness factor, if you like. And I think that's really important, because ultimately we want to create a town that people are proud of, and there's a real buzz. That was the vision that we set out. So lots of things that we can collect and monitor and report back in the future.
Yeah, I mean, it's very much the vision that the previous administration had when we set the whole thing going. But I'm very conscious that we need to show that it actually is successful. I'm going to take Julie, and then I'll come back to Rob, if that's all right, and then Marnie afterwards.
So the Future High Streets Fund was achieved in Boxing Day 2020? Start of 2021?
No, so this is where it got a bit complicated. So an initial award was made Boxing Day 2020, which was 69% of the amount that we bid for. So a number of authorities were given 69% of what they asked for because so many places applied. It took until, I think it was April or May of 2021, after we'd done a further iteration of bid for Future High Streets to be satisfied that on a revised scheme we could still deliver what we were saying. So we're talking sort of summer 2021, we started to actually see the benefit of the funding. At that point, immediately, we started procurement for support with design work. And we haven't actually downed tools since. It just takes a really, really long time.
That's okay.
Yeah, I just wanted to add that another way to probably gauge it would be sort of 12 to 18 months' time, the number of new planning applications for the town centre, and also the change of uses. You know, that would be a very good gauge of things.
So the measurements will be new planning applications, increased business rates, increased parking fees, presumably?
Not necessarily, because we don't want everybody to have to drive.
How's everybody going to provide for their cars in town?
Because we will be attracting people via the railway. We will be encouraging people to cycle, so I'm sure you're aware there's some significant works going on around the town at the moment to improve the cycle network. So it's a whole package of things, but yeah, parking is one of the indicators.
And the other one I've got down, because I was thinking about it as I came in here, the other one will be the bookings for the Market Square.
Absolutely,
presumably, won't they?
That's one of the indicators that we've got as part of the funding agreement. It's the bookings and also the revenue that we get from that.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So I think we'll want to have a look at it in 12 months' time.
Okay.
Do we still have the thing? Sorry, through you, Chair. Do we still have the one that measures the footfall through the town?
Yeah.
Sorry, it should be Marnie, but just while we're about it, where are the footfall counters now, and who? And we used to have the actual figures.
Yeah, and I'm cautious with footfall counters because they only tell you part of the story. So if, for example, I did a river dance in front of one of the footfall counters, it would count me every time I went past it. That doesn't mean there were 17 people in town. It just means that I kept going in front of the footfall counter. So I think the information is
not
useful,
likely to
but
do that, though.
I wouldn't rule it out.
staff will get up to.
But it's useful in the context of other things like how many bookings in the Market Square, what were the events that were put on. But in terms of where are they, there's the one that's long-standing, been at Boots, and there's another that measures the footfall at Riverside. I was going to say the other one, but that's in stone. So, yeah.
Yeah, so just two, and they're both commercially operated, aren't they?
So yeah, we've the one at Riverside is operated by Riverside. The one at Boots, we have control of that one.
Right. Okay. Anybody got some, got other, oh, Marnie, sorry, I keep forgetting
that's
you.
All right, Jen. Couple of points. So as far as planning applications for changing use into properties, I think we just need to be careful about how they're being done. The sizes of the properties that we will end up with. I know that I'm certainly aware of a particular property that was rented out to my daughter's friend who lived within the town centre, and the bedroom was so small that she could put her hand basically on both of the walls either side of the bed, and the rent was absolutely extortionate. So provided we're very conscious of the kind of properties that we're actually transforming and making them actually livable for, you know, normal people to be able to actually live their lives in and not just get up and get out. So I think that's something we need to be very, very aware of. Some planning applications obviously just seem to slip through.
Well, if I just come back on that point, and I am straying into John's area, so he might want to join the table.
Yes.
This is another area where there's a perception that the council has ultimate control over everything, whereas you don't necessarily need a full planning application to get change of use consent. And over the last 5, 6, 7 years, John, something like that, the rules around permitted development rights for change of use have been relaxed significantly, and so the perception that we can stop inappropriate conversions isn't always the case. And I completely appreciate what you're saying, which is why when we're looking at delivering a scheme, we'll absolutely be making sure that what we're creating is fit for purpose, but there is a limit on what we can control outside of that.
Obviously, when you're renting within a town centre, the rent reflects that.
Absolutely.
And the other thing I just wanted to say was, well done on this, because it's been a fantastic journey, you know, as being a member of the previous administration, the work that Francis has been doing on it, the work that the administration has done, the work that you've been doing to see it come from a spark of an idea to a finished product in the town centre, and obviously these drawings that we have previously seen aspects of. So I know that what we're seeing here has been worked on for a very, very, very long time, and I'm just so thrilled that it's got to this point that you're able to kind of be able to talk to people about it. But well done to you, Michelle. Well done to you, Francis. And I have to say well done to the previous administration, because obviously they've done this. I look forward to seeing how things follow and what the changes are, and actually being able to walk around and visit some of these places that we're seeing here.
There will be the delay.
Yes, I think the other thing that's for me, because my heart's in there, is the recognition of the importance of our historic buildings in the town, because they have been allowed really to rot over decades, and it, you know, it's very much part of my ambition that we bring them back to real state of good repair over the next few years. Can we go through the individual pages just to make sure that we pick everything up? And we're starting at page 3, I think that's right. Just actually, it's a question for John, really, on this matter of the rooms above the shops. And for years and years, nobody was allowed to have any residents above shops, because the fire service said it was dangerous, didn't they? And so you had to, the only access was by an outside stair thing. If people have got prior approval, how are we actually going to change that culture in the main street, particularly, or the whole of the town, and actually in Stone and so forth as well, the prior approval system is allowed to continue?
I think, as Michelle said, the system of prior approval has expanded quite a lot over the last 5-6 years, something like that. To the extent that you can do quite large buildings now. Recent one was Victoria Park House, which provide probably 50 units, something like that altogether. And it's not only that you can change the use from office to residential, but there's also now permitted development rights to be able to add additional stories for some of these as well. So more control goes out of our hands. So you won't see planning applications for some of the things you would have done a few years ago. In terms of how we can take control, it's quite difficult because nobody's going to submit a planning application if they don't need to. Unfortunately, what it means is that we get a number of developments where the developer implements permitted development rights to change, but then can't change the exterior of the building, so actually needs to put a planning application in for that. There was an example on Eastgate Street, I've got what the building's called now, opposite the
Britannia House, I think it is, so
former offices could change without needing planning permission under prior approval system. They couldn't change the exterior. Now, thankfully they put in an application and we've approved a better exterior than would otherwise have been there, but they didn't have to do that. I think in that case it was because they needed to market properties and wanted them to look attractive from the outside.
Right, so residences over shops are always going to be problematic in the middle of town, basically, unless they want to alter the frontages.
They're not necessarily problematic, but they're not easy to deal with, and it's difficult to be able to get them to a high standard.
Which takes me back to the question of our commitment to inward investment. So we need to look at that in a year's time to see what success the council has had in actually making this happen. It's going to be interesting. So, sorry, I'll go back to page 3. Statement 4. Anybody got comments on page 4?
It's just talking about the main aim of the project is to improve the pedestrian and cycle routes into the town. Can I just ask if it's possible that somebody could please take a look at the bridge, the pedestrian bridge in Victoria Park, because it's had a lump of tarmac thrown in a hole, I'm assuming, and it's actually sticking up. So if anybody who's partially sighted attempts to try and walk over the bridge, they're going to trip up and injure themselves.
So that's the
station side of the white pedestrian bridge that goes over the river.
The steep one,
just as you're actually beginning to climb the steep bit up to the bridge. It's got a big lump of tarmac. It just hasn't been flattened to the rest of the paving around it.
Chair, we can look at that.
Thank you.
I haven't seen it with my own eyes, but we'll
I got off the train a couple of days ago and walked that way and noticed it.
Yeah, we'll have a look at that.
Sorry, Chair.
On 5.6, which is going to be a complex. When are the plans coming out for that? How's that going to be promoted and shared with the community?
Yep, so on this one, the first thing that we need to do is work up an initial design that will then be subject to public engagement. That will then form part of detailed planning application. Obviously, you've then got your statutory consultation period as well. But yeah, as soon as there's something that we are able to share, we will. There's no reason why we wouldn't.
And you'd have a display in the town and
stuff. Absolutely, yeah.
So, thank you for that. Anything else on page... anything on page five now?
Sorry, just going back to your comments, thank you. Not just the co-op, I think. There's Stafford's had a huge decline over the... following those headlines you put up for the last 20 years, or at least last 10 years, a massive decline, and it's just absolutely amazing that the vision that's now coming out and pushing forward from the sort of building on the Market Square and Victoria Park, etc. So I think it's really important, because that's one of the questions we get asked a lot, and you see it on social media, I'm sure you do as well, is what's next? What's that? Cause this, like, the Market Square is just phase one, isn't it? And then there's phase two and phase three, so it's not like an individual project.
Absolutely.
And I think it's really important to have, I don't know where we went somewhere, didn't we? And they've got the whole thing on a billboard vision for this place, and you could see what they were going to do. It was really good.
Yeah, and I think one of the things that I was trying to do, but it didn't work very well visually, was basically have a map of the town centre showing where the different projects are with these images, but it was just a bit too busy. But yeah, it's absolutely that. It's the bits that have been done, the bits that are being done, the bits that are to come forward, the bits that we'd like the private sector to come in, you know, get involved with. So yeah, that big picture stuff's really important.
I think it's really important, again, through you, Chair, that it's acknowledged, like the north part of the town, everybody knows what it is. Particularly recently with Wetherspoons closing, etc. It's like, oh, but it's about, keep saying to everybody, this is our vision.
Yeah.
You know, this is what we're going to do, and this is what we're planning. And again, it goes into the commercial side, doesn't it? If we've got this fabulous vision for Stafford, people think, yeah, I want to be there.
Definitely.
Chair, can I just add to that? Yeah, it's something we're very aware of, and the kind of marketing and comms is critical. Obviously, we've shared the announcement around the co-op, we've got the CGI images, but there will be more to come. And we want to look at the way that we present that, whether that's through, you know, sort of interactive maps, better information on our website, marketing collateral, that sort of thing. Because Michelle did mention earlier the UK Reef event in May. There will be another event next May. We want to go there as part of the Staffordshire team, and we want to have a very clear offer to developers and investors in terms of these the opportunities. Last year, or this year I should say, Eastgate was launched, and I think that's moved along now. So we want to go next May with further opportunities. So that's a piece of work that we are looking at, and it's an active discussion about resource and how we do more of that. But it's a good point, because we want to keep people informed, whether that's residents or investors, developers, of the progress that we're making, and link it back to the vision that Michelle outlined in the presentation.
Yeah.
Again, Chair, through you, I think it's important to A, not steal like the thunder of Blackstone with their food festival, but bring other things in so that we're building with events, you know, different events throughout, so that it keeps bringing people in.
Yeah.
That it's not just something pie in the sky at the end of a very long tunnel. Mm. It's about we're doing it today in anticipation of tomorrow. So we keep having events, and I know it's a lot of work, but yeah, it's the price we've got to pay to bring people in. Isn't it?
We talked about, so I'm just trying to find where I'd put it, but Dean will know. We talked about setting up a task and finish group just to have a look at the events and the activities in Vicky Park and in the Market Square in Stafford. Also, I think in Stone and possibly Eccleshall as well.
Chair, it's in the work programme. So
what was the date of that?
We said early next year, so we just need to determine who's...
Well, we're almost in early next year, which is why I'm sort of bringing it into being.
Yeah. Well, the work programme's on the agenda, so I think, you know...
We'll come back to it. And I think that would sort of help to answer some of the questions you've got there, Dean, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. So that will come.
Can I ask also about consulting with local makers and businesses, small businesses, and artisans, and those sort of people? I know I've heard of groups that are really, really keen to know what the opportunity is out here.
Yeah. And I think the main starting point of that is that we want to have some level of detail to share. If we keep going out with a blank piece of paper, it's difficult to define then what we're actually able to deliver. So what we don't want to do is overpromise and then go, well, actually, this site's not big enough for that, or actually, technically, that won't work. So, yeah, as soon as we've got something that we can then start putting those building blocks on top of, absolutely.
Okay. So I'm moving swiftly on from page 5 to page 6. That does the whole of that section. Now, are there any other questions or challenges, Brian?
Yeah, we've mentioned what's gone on at the rear of the Shire Hall, the hub.
Yes, what's happening at
the
front.
There's been no mention whatsoever of the Shire Hall. Do we know anything what is proposed or suggested for bringing it back into use?
So the last time this was raised, I don't know whether it was a scrutiny committee or whether it was just a general inquiry, we took this back to the county council, and basically what they were looking at is what additional works might be needed within the Shire Hall itself to bring that back into use. I'll be honest with you, I haven't heard any further updates since, so it's probably best if we take that away and come back to you.
Yeah.
I think the significant work was needed at the rear, which is what they've done. But yeah, we can get you a detailed update on
that.
That'd
be helpful.
Yeah, I'd appreciate that. Thank you, Jim.
Any more? So really, to round up, you've got numbers of schemes now right across the town. What will be worth looking at next year is the interconnectivity between these schemes, which is where the investment and so on comes into it, because they're not quite joined up yet, in my head, I must say. And at some stage we'll look at the Stafford visitor experience, I think would be helpful. We're going to go and quiz people on the street and say what you think about it sometime next year. But thank you very much for that, Michelle. It was a very worthwhile presentation. Well done.
Yeah.
And we now move on to the next item. Dean, it's you, is it?
Yes, it is. Just before I do that, can I just say thank you to Michelle for the presentation, but also I should say Michelle has been beavering away on these projects for a number of years.
She has.
It is, I just want to acknowledge that, because I started in April, but it is pleasing to see that these projects are coming forward now, and I want to move on before making up comments as well. Sorry, I've embarrassed you.
Sorry, Chair, can I just add to that? And I think it's important to note as well,
yeah,
that the people that have been working on this are residents of the borough.
Okay.
So they're people who want the best for their county town because it's theirs. You know, they're not, it's just not somebody who's got pie-in-the-sky ideas and lives miles away. It's us, it's our community that are making or trying to make the area that we all live in better. So I can imagine it's been quite difficult working on this and being objective and not actually putting as much of your heart in as perhaps you want to. So, yeah, well done.
The ongoing communication is going to be critical.
Absolutely.
Very good.
Sorry, Chair.
We're moving on now,
yep,
Dean, to the,
yep,
economy delivery plan for 2023-24.
Okay, so this is the quarter two performance report.
Yep.
I don't know, Chair, you want to do, but you want to go through it page by page.
Well, I think we'll go through it page by page because I imagine there's not much to be said on
some
of the pages.
We've covered largely through the presentation.
Exactly.
So
page 7. Anybody got points on page 7?
Just the
We've got an item coming up next year on development management. Do you want to update us, John, on development? It's the summary of successes at quarter two. Reducing the backlog of applications.
Yeah.
Oh, Dean's going to do it, right.
No, well, I think we will bring an update back to committee around that springtime.
Yeah.
But I think overall, Chair, progress has been made in reducing the backlog of applications. We are down to around about 590, applications. So the numbers are coming down. We are prioritising trying to get the older cases determined, cases that we've had for longer than 12 months, whilst keeping the newer applications in time. So I think overall, Chair, progress being made. We will bring a more detailed update back to scrutiny with all the graphs and charts and some of the actions that we've taken as a team. But it is hard work. We're trying to get applications down. We are aware that applicants and agents have been very patient with the number of the applications, but I think, John, we're starting to get those numbers down. So unless there's any further questions now.
You had an agents forum that was initiated by one of my very enthusiastic ward members.
Yeah.
Did that go well? And did you get a good turnout?
We did
about
35
agents there.
That's excellent.
So overall, yeah, the agents forum went well. It was well attended. We had a very honest and open conversation with the agents. We gave them an update in terms of the actions that we're taking as a team to get the backlog down. We gave them a performance update in terms of the number of applications, performance on non-majors and majors. I think the agents were very honest and clear with us that they wanted, there were a number of areas they wanted to see addressed. Firstly, we did have a discussion about pre-application advice, and you know, we do want to return to that, and that's something, Chair, we can pick up at the update report. But the priority at the moment is to get the numbers down.
And with pre-app, could you, I mean, I know it's way ahead, but could we look at the charging for pre-app?
That was part of the discussion as well, and
yeah.
I think agents were quite honest with us on that as well. We talked about extensions of time, and we talked about customer contact. So we've taken those away. We're going to look at those and look at what actions we can take forward as the team and report back to the agents. And probably spring time, John, to have a further meeting. We haven't set a date yet. But
no, we indicated 6 months or so, didn't we?
Yeah.
So it should be spring.
But yeah, went well, and lots for us to do.
Have we got a date for our review, our own review here? Is that
Chair, on March, I was going to propose we put it onto the March.
Is that all right? Is that all right with members to put it forward on, put it into the March
programme? On the bottom of page 7, the slippage of the local plan, I thought it was all ready to go. Is there a reason for that slippage?
The local plan was at the preferred option stage. There was a consultation last year. The team have reviewed all of the consultation responses and representations, and we're currently reviewing the next steps. I think in terms of the timetable, that has been reviewed, and Chair, you'll note we have an item on the local plan for the meeting on the 11th of January for scrutiny. So. We can bring an update after scrutiny in January. Is that okay?
Yes. Is that okay with everybody? I think you'll have more to say then, won't you? Because if there's a change of direction, it becomes an extremely important meeting. We know that there's been change in government thinking, and there may be a change of thinking within this new administration. We don't know. But we certainly need to have a clear indication of it by January.
Yeah, we are expecting an update to the National Planning Policy Framework, if not this week, in the next couple of weeks. Obviously, we need to assess the implications of that. The government have consulted on a new local plan making system, so we need to assess the impact of that. So, Chair, the intention is to bring that all forward in a presentation in January, just so we can set out the latest position.
And I think that will be a whole meeting agenda, basically, because there are a lot of implications to that, those changes.
Can I just ask what the situation is with the applications that in the backlog that have ended up by having to be through default have been allowed, have been approved. I know that there was an issue with there being a few applications that were being approved because of the time scale in the backlog. I wondered if that had been sorted now, or whether there are any applications that have gone through for approval, as I say, by default.
Looking at John, just in terms of the correct
terminology. I'm trying to find the terminology to explain what I'm saying.
There are very few applications that get approved by default. There's only ones under prior approval system.
Yeah.
Now, there have been a number of agricultural buildings to residential, but those are the only ones I'm aware of, unless you've got a particular example.
I think what Marnie is talking about is non-determination.
Okay. That's exactly what
that
was the term I was looking for.
We've had, after the 8 or 13 week period, it's possible to appeal non-determination. We've had four, I think, something like that, that have gone that way. And when they've gone to appeal, yes, some have been granted, but equally, the most recent one, we won the appeal. So it doesn't mean that if you go to the inspector on a non-determination appeal, they'll grant permission. It's still a lottery in that sense. So we had one on a house extension, and that was granted. The most recent one was. Two houses at Burston, I think it was, in the open countryside, and inspector dismissed quite comprehensively that appeal.
Okay, so through you, Chairman, so you don't feel that we're in a situation where we may find that precedents are being set because of these types of applications?
No.
Okay. Page 8. I think in a way that we've covered a lot of that. A five-year land statement will come back to the local plan review. And we've done that. Is that okay? Are we going to page 9?
Largely covered that. Chair.
We've largely covered that. And Stafford Station Gateway and Meesbrook. Those are going to be interesting.
Well, again, we've got Meesbrook on the work programme.
That's for January, isn't it?
So I think
you could hold that with the HS2 announcements and all the rest of it.
Shall there's anything to add?
Anything on Gateway?
With Meesbrook, I think the intention was that by this time we'd be able to give you a bit more detail around the strategic outline business case for the railway station, but that has been extended because of that announcement around HS2.
Yeah.
But come January, we've got the item on the agenda for that. The station gateway, it says in the progress update, there's a piece of work being undertaken by the County Council, some feasibility work, which was something that I think the funding actually came from the West Midlands Rail Partnership or something like that. Yeah,
it did.
So that's being managed by the County Council, and it's looking at a whole raft of issues around accessibility to the station, which flutes in partly to the station approach project, but is a little broader.
Okay.
Just on the gateway, last meeting I did ask if it could be part of the work plan, but it doesn't appear to be in the work plan.
It's in the January.
It's not the gateway.
The gateway.
We haven't got that on the work program currently.
Does it?
We've got.
Would it
quite a lot on the work programme.
It's not a big enough subject at the moment for task and finish either, is it?
No.
Where could you fit it in? Can we put it in January?
We could do it in a project update report.
Yeah, so the standing item that you've got around the project updates, which was basically focused in on the town centre for this meeting, but is usually borough-wide.
Yeah.
When there is substantive detail on that does actually go in that report. I think it's just since this committee started meeting this municipal year, we haven't had anything to go in there, but we can certainly do that for the next one.
Would that be all right for you, Doug? Okay, that, yes, please, to that. Anything else on page 11? Page 12. That was all the good news about Westbridge Park, which... if you could see it as a tick, page 13, developing Stafford as a hub of productivity. Identifying 800 growth businesses. How's that progressing?
So this is a lot of these indicators over the next couple of pages are linked strongly into the UK Shared Prosperity Fund investment plan, where we've got various funding opportunities to support business growth. So that's where a lot of this activity is now sitting.
I mean, it's a good news story on the face of it, isn't it?
Yeah.
And the point, which presumably is Martine, saying the challenge is identifying those that are ready to grow.
Yeah.
That would be an interesting thing for this scrutiny committee to have a look at. Again, it's time tabling it in. Could you have a look and see how it could be fitted?
Yeah.
I mean, it's going to take time, obviously, so it's something for next year.
I think so, because we've got a number of grant programmes that could potentially impact on the things you want to look at, it might be worth waiting until those programmes have had a chance to take effect with the businesses before we try and kind of unpack that.
And there's the rural grant programme and so on, but they are all really important because they're part of this inward investment idea. I'm looking at Councillor Kenny now. Rob, you're mainly concerned with the town centre, aren't you? But as a cabinet member, it seems to me that we're talking about outcomes all the time. We can do feasibility reports and all the rest of it. But what we really want to see next year is how much these grants have led to success, not just with starter companies, but with unicorns, growth companies, and so on. And I think that would be... I don't know how the officers are going to fit all this in.
I think, Chair, there's a whole suite of actions here which are linked, as Michelle said, UK SPF or the rural grant.
Yeah.
I think, we've got those programmes in place, they're up and running. It's probably going to be probably about 6 months before we can start to give you some meaningful information. And I'm quite conscious we've got a lot to report.
So it's something for the end towards next autumn.
Yeah, definitely.
But let's flag it up because next autumn comes around quite fast.
Yeah.
And it would be an opportunity, particularly if it was a Task and Finish group, to bring some of those businesses in to speak to us and perhaps the Chamber and so on, so that we could make it a meaningful exercise. And that ties in with the visitor economy one as well, because it's very well having a million sightings. I'd love to have a million sightings. It's the sort of idea of somebody counting all the visitors as they walk down the high street. So it's not just that we have promotional activities, but actually what's the outcome of having promotional activities.
I think, Chair, you wanted an update on business and leisure tourism at a future meeting, so we can pull that together. We've alluded to the development of a local visitor economy partnership, the LVEP proposal, which is an accredited body that is recognised by Visit England and Staffordshire as a county applied to be a local visitor economy partnership. So we should be able to report on that probably the next meeting.
Yep.
But some of the metrics, again, around the size, the value of the tourist economy, I know that the Destination Partnership are looking at that, I think, through the STEAM model.
Yeah.
I'm not sure if you've had the report yet, but there's certainly something we can ask Martin.
Who's our representative?
Cabinet member for Economic Development and Planning.
Yep.
So, Councillor Reid. So it, we should be able to provide a more detailed update on that. I think we've got it down for the March.
Yes, and if somebody from the DMP would be able to turn up, that might be useful as well.
Charlotte Kane.
It's Charlotte, yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Does that sound all right with members? I mean, because I've been here so long, I can tell you that the visitor economy stuff always sat with the leisure department, and the focus was totally on how much leisure was taking place in the leisure centres and the swimming pool. And I spent a long time saying it's a big industry and it needs to sit with economic development. And eventually the other cabinet member gave way and said, OK, you can take it over. And it was staggering how important the tourist economy is to Stafford Borough. I mean, it's everything from Trentham, Shugborough, Cannock Chase, through to the use of the canals, small-scale farm businesses and so on. It is a big, big business. And so I think it'll be a very interesting meeting in March when we have it. Thank you. Page 15, that's the local plan. That's going to be covered. Anything on that? And then we get to the work programme. Let's go through the work programme. Has it changed now, the work programme, as a result of this evening's meeting? I think it probably has a bit. So the 11th of January is Meesbrook and the local plan. Big meeting.
And we'll do that Stafford Gateway update as part of
it. And the Gateway.
Yeah.
5th of March is the business and leisure tourism. And the biodiversity net gain, that legislation has not quite come through yet.
It's been delayed till January.
So
we've got that.
That's why we need it in the March meeting.
Yeah.
So that's going to be quite a busy agenda as well.
Yeah.
And the rest?
I think, Chair, if I just suggest the business and leisure tourism, we put brackets grants, but it isn't just about grants, but it's that wider visitor economy.
No, it's the importance of the, and how we increase the footfall, which is why I think we could do with Charlotte coming to that meeting.
Yeah.
And at one stage we did a survey of hotels and so on, if you remember.
Yep.
Okay. Does that sound all right to everybody?
Yeah.
It's quite busy. Anything else? We've got to the end of the papers. It's 7:45, so we've got 10 to 5.
Sorry, Chair.
Yep.
Just the task and finish, are we going to set that up?
Yes. Yes, have you got the note about the task and finish?
So we set a task and finish for the events. Yeah, so we need nominations, Chair, to sit on that. And what I would suggest is we don't have the entire committee. It's probably a smaller group, people who are interested and want to participate. So if we could get nominations tonight, that'd be good.
Yes. Who would like to? So the title will be. Give us a title, Dean.
Town Centre Events.
Town Centre Events. Is that just for Stafford, and or do we include Stone as well? Is that taking it too wide?
The only thing is with Stone,
it's
Stone
already
Town
sorted.
Town Council tend to lead on
yeah.
that, whereas
so
we take the
So it's Stafford only, Town Centre Events. Who would like to sit on a task and finish? There you are. Looks like everybody. Yelling.
One, two, three, four. That's it. Four hands,
though,
isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Is that all right? And if it's too many, I will stand down, and if not, I'll do it as well.
So
as Peter Edgler, we haven't got tonight, and who else isn't here? There's another, somebody else hasn't turned up. John Powell hasn't come.
Excuse me, Chair,
so
we do need another person tonight.
So, shall we stick with the five then? Jenny Barron as well, and
we'll
leave it to them.
Yeah, we'll try and get a date in the diary
and share that with.
Yeah.
Is that all right, everyone?
Yeah.
Thank you. And that was the only task and finish that we've got set up.
I think we need to get that one up and running. Yes.
We're ready to start.
Yeah.
Okay, thank you very much, everyone, for your attendance, and thank you very much again to Michelle and officers, and to Jackie for taking the minutes.
Yeah.